Welcome to The Wolf Den, the podcast about the business and people of podcasting. I'm your host, Lex Friedman. Today, we're talking to London-based podcast producer and founder of Broccoli Content, Renee Richardson. Hi, Renee.
Hi.
And we'll learn more about you in just a minute. But first, we're going to do Shows We're Jealous Of, the section of the show where we each get to highlight shows that we like so much we wish we had made them. Renee, do you have a show you're jealous of?
Yes. It actually came out on Friday, and it's called Julie, the Oh, bloody hell. Do you know what? I shut my Skype, because my internet, because I can't find what it's actually called. And it is called... and it's really annoying because my Apple Mac app cuts off the title. So this isn't actually helping. It's called Julie Unwinding the Miracle.
Okay. And what is that? I have not heard of it yet.
I got it. Sorry. So it's a lady who's actually documenting her death. Her name's Julie Yip Williams. She died of colon cancer aged 41. And when she found out she was diagnosed at 37, she decided to record everything. And Eleanor Kagan is the producer and host of the show and taking us through our journey. So there's only been one episode, but it's going to be like pretty full on, I imagine. But I listened to the first episode. It's beautiful. And it's just, death is something that affects all of us, which is really sad to say and like a bit morbid, but it's true. So I'm just interested to see where this series takes us.
And that's one that's coming out of Pineapple Street Media as a production partner, I imagine.
Yeah, and it came out on Friday.
Very cool.
Last week.
Well, I will admit, I intend to cheat today, Renee, because every other week on this show, I have to come up with another show I'm jealous of. And I said, Harry, I think I might be out for the time being of shows I'm jealous of because I haven't heard any that I haven't talked about. Will you pinch hit? So, Harry, do you have a show you're jealous of?
Hello, it's me, Harry. Yes.
Hi, Harry.
Hi, everybody.
Go for it.
I do have one that I'm jealous of.
It's, hi, Harry.
Hi. After Renee's pick, it might sound a little weird, but I really like this show called What the Tuck. It's a Vulture show that they're doing with HeadGum with Joel Kim Booster and Nicole Byer, who are two comedians who I think are really funny, and it's a RuPaul's Drag Race recap podcast. And it's the only RuPaul's Drag Race podcast recap show that exists, and it's so much fun. They're both so funny. They have some great guests. It's a really great companion piece to a really great television show.
I love that. Two very disparate picks, but people can like multiple things, Harry. It's okay.
Yeah, because I also love RuPaul's Drag Race.
Oh, see? Look at that.
Check out What the Tuck. It's good.
Once again, we're talking with Renee Richardson. Renee, you are the founder of Broccoli Content. I want to know a whole lot about what Broccoli Content is, but before we get there, let's start with the origin story. How did you get started in podcasting?
I had a 15 to like 18 year career in film and television, like starting out as a child actor. Then I went into talent agencies and worked my way up. And then I went into actual TV production and film production. After that, I got a bit jaded, as you do. And I quit and retired and was going to be open my own vegan cafe because I just wanted a nice life. And that's when a job at Acast came across my email. And I actually thought it sounded interesting and I went for it.
I love that. And we're going to dive into Acast in a minute. But what's your philosophy on jobs? Like, what made you say, hey, this opportunity from Acast is the right one? Or now it's the right time for me to leap from TV and move away? Like, what's your kind of guiding principle about your career?
I literally just like things that I love learning, and I love learning new things. And I don't believe there's, and probably if I like said, oh, I want to fly like with myself without a plane, obviously I can't do that. But apart from that, I don't think I can't do anything. I think I can do anything I put my mind to. So when Acast came along and it said, you know, content manager about podcasts, and I was just like, that's something totally different that I've not done before. And I just wanted a new challenge. And yeah, so I literally just take anything that's challenging.
Got it. So you spent a long time working in TV development. And then, like you said, an Acast job shows up in your inbox and you say, I'm going to take a look at this. What was your starting role at Acast?
I was content manager there. I was, when they first launched, they launched in Sweden in the April, and then they were launching a London office in October. So I started about a month before that. and I was a content manager, but that back then involved like filling the app with all the shows, signing people. I was a bit of customer service. I was a bit of finance. I was literally, it was a all hands on deck situation. Like my first day, I think, or second day, I went to Sweden to learn about the app.
Yeah.
And I was there for a couple of days and then I came back. So I was literally a bit of everything because I think at the time there was only three of us.
So when you're at Acast, what were some of the highlights of that role? What did you enjoy the most about being there?
I liked the people, some of the people. I did like some of the people. I liked going... that was the first time I had been able to like go out to brands and kind of talk about how podcasting could, you know, benefit them. So I went, one of the first ones I did, I went to ASOS and I was like, hey guys, there's this thing called podcasting. You guys should get into it. Cause ASOS have a magazine. They're like an online shopping thing. I buy all my clothes there. They have a magazine. So they've got an editorial department and it's kind of, I was, had to convince them it was kind of like another outlet for their editorial team, and they bought into it and started a podcast. So that was one of my big highlights. And it was also connecting with podcasters around the world, because obviously the app is not geo-targeted, so you can get the content everywhere. So I was able to like, I met a lot of American podcasters and I signed some Australian podcasts and things like that. So it was just nice to be able to speak to people and get to know people around the world.
Gotcha. And
so that was a highlight.
Yeah, no, I love that. Focusing on ASOS for a moment, what was the big idea that you pitched them? See what I did there?
Yeah, I did. So they literally in their magazine have a section called My Big Idea. So the magazine just goes to their subscribers or people on their like premiere thing that gets their one day shopping or whatever. And so My Big Idea was a section where you have female entrepreneurs who talk about their one big idea that turned into a business. So it could be like, oh, one day I was making like jewelry in my bedroom and then I decided to like get a market store. And then next thing you know, I'm by like, I don't know, Emily Sandé, who's a singer, is wearing it and something like that. So we use that in a way to kind of show that they support women. It wasn't about, oh, you can buy this on ASOS. It was showing that ASOS support young female entrepreneurs and that they are a platform to give these businesses. So they definitely, we all decided it wasn't like, hey, buy this on the website. So some of the things weren't available on the website, but it was just that they giving the businesses and the women a platform to talk about how you do it and also showing the behind the scenes, because all you see on Instagram is the good parts.
And so eventually you decide to leave Acast and I believe go to the BBC. Is that right?
No, I want to make it clear. I have never, ever worked for the BBC in it. I freelance for it sometimes. But like I've never worked in the BBC.
Why do you want to make that so clear? That sounds important. Because, why are we making it?
Because the BBC is such a big machine.
Don't hold back.
It's such a big machine. And I kind of, in many ways, think it's where creativity goes to die. Like, and that's really blunt. But like, if you work there, people work there for like 10, 15 years or whatever, and they become out a different person. So I just want to make it clear that I haven't worked there. And to work in audio in the UK, you don't have to work at the BBC. So I just want to make that clear. I have not worked at the BBC. So yeah, I put that out there. Now they'll never hire me again. No, I'm joking. But so after Acast, I actually went to, I had a job at Audible, but Audible have a really like intense hiring process because obviously it's an Amazon company and they deal with money and all that stuff. So you have to do like credit checks and not credit checks, but like background checks and all kinds of things. So that was actually taking ages. So I got a small job at Columbia Records just for 3 months in between.
Got it.
So I worked there for a little bit, then went to Audible.
And what did you do at Audible?
At Audible, what was my job there? Kind of like a production coordinator. So they'd started doing their original content stuff with Eric Newsom, who was the head of it in New York or Newark. And then in the UK, they were setting up a team, but it was chaos. There was loads of pilots commissioned, but no one had contracts. No one had been paid. No one had delivery dates. No one was really keeping track of everything. So I was kind of hired to kind of try and put everything in one place and together and keep track of it and kind of put systems in place because of my TV production. When I worked in production, that's what I did.
Got it. And so it sounds like it was maybe a little bit chaotic, but were there fun parts there?
No.
Renee, I like you.
So I told you I'm not media trained.
No, I love it.
Like, I actually...
what made it a bad fit for you?
I actually hated it at Audible. It was awful.
What made it a bad fit for you?
For many, many different reasons. So in TV and film, so in England, so you've got the talent agencies in America, like the WMEs and the UTAs and the CAAs. But in England, you have kind of independent ones who have partnerships with the American ones. So our ones over here are much more like kind of relaxed and a bit more creative. So it's all very startup-y, even though it's an established business. So I'm used to that kind of startup-y, you know, everyone, all hands on deck, you know, yes, you're hired to be, and originally I was hired in the mailroom and then I worked my way up. So you might be in the mailroom, but you also might be doing the permissions for like an old author because they're happy for you to do lots of different things. In Audible, it's such a sterile corporate environment that it was just awful. I was just like, how can anyone be creative here? So that's what I wasn't used to. I just have never worked in a corporate environment and they're just not for me.
Got it. So
that's one of the
things. How long did you last?
I lasted 3 months.
Wow.
But it was only a 3-month contract, so it wasn't that bad. That's how long I was meant to be there. but during that time, when I was there, I was like, I need a way out. So my friend, I did make a friend there. He kind of said, he saw a hot pod and was like, hey, Panoply are making a London office. You should contact this guy. So basically in my Twitter bio, I used to just have a person because that's what I am. but my friend was like, you need to put more in your bio. So like I put in like, you know, formerly Acast, Columbia Records, da 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 da. And I tweeted like Ryan Dilly was his name. And I was like, hey, congrats on the job. That was it. And then he then DM'd me or followed me and then DM'd me and was like, hey, we should meet for coffee. So we met for coffee. And then basically I got the job at Panoply, which was good, which meant when Audible was over, because I was still doing that while I was at Audible. But when that contract finished, I was like, cool, because I'm going on to Panoply now.
Got it. So you're at Panoply, and at Panoply you worked, I believe, on Good Sport, right?
Yeah, so that was one of their Pinner shows, which Pinner is just, like, it's gone to a separate company now. But Good Sport was, my first kind of real producing gig at Panoply and in the world. And I worked with a great team who were actually based out of DC. It was Dan Bloom and Afim Shapiro. Afim is now... he works at Vox on Today Explained, and Dan is now gone freelance as like a freelance producer and is doing, I think, a show for you guys. but yeah, so I worked with them. I didn't know how to like use Pro Tools or anything. And Afim was so good. Like he did a couple of like Skype tutorials of Pro Tools, and he basically just said practice. So that's what I did. I practiced.
I love that.
But I loved, Afim was awesome. He's one of my big, like, he was one of the people who, like, rooted me on and, like, a big supporter of mine. Yeah, he's awesome.
I mean, I don't know if you have tons of thoughts on this, but talk to me just in general about the idea of making podcast content for kids and what the opportunity is there and what kind of the reasons for doing it are.
See, you've asked me. I'm going to be honest, though. Is that okay?
Please.
When Pinner,
I beg you.
But when Pinner originally came out, because I'm like a black woman, I think there's massive underrepresented audiences in the adult world who already, could potentially listen to podcasts who are completely ignored by the industry and not having content made for them, not having content made by them, and our voices just aren't there. So when they were like, oh, we're going to make this app for kids, I was like, you're putting kids ahead of like actually making content for minorities. And I know kids are important as well, but it's like, I wasn't into it, but that was the job that was available. So I went and made a kid show. That was what was
Got
available.
It.
I do think there is an opportunity for kids, but I can't ignore the fact that, so people make content for themselves. So the person who decided to make Pinner, he's a white man who has white children. So he wanted to make content for white children. If you were like a black person like me, you'd be like, hey, let's make content for minorities first, and then, or do both together. But so I was just not against it, but I was just like, I saw where how things were going, and it's all about one side. There is definitely an opportunity to make content for kids, like kids of the future. This year, I'm going to start doing podcast workshops in schools, because I just think that like in London specifically, but in England, it's kind of, you're kind of led to like, hey, let's do music. And it's like, not everyone's musically gifted, but everyone has a voice and everyone has a personality. So I'm going to start doing workshops. I'm speaking to a couple companies now who are going to like support it and do it with them. But to give children like under 16s a platform and a way to get their voices out, because also grown-ups tell children's stories on the news or when you see documentaries or anything. It's not actually kids giving us their own opinion. So I definitely think there's content for kids. Kids need to be entertained. Children's like entertainment is a massive industry, but also we've got to think who's making it. That is a problem. That's, you know, we've got to look at those things and not make the same mistakes.
Yeah. Well, my take is that kids want to do what their parents do, right? And so my kids and most people's kids see their parents using smartphones a lot, so they want to use smartphones a lot, right? My kids are aware that I listen to podcasts, so they want to listen to podcasts. And the podcasts that I'm going to listen to with my kids are ones that appeal to both of us at the same time. They're not going to listen to ones that are super profane. I'm not going to listen to true crime shows with them, but shows that target kids that are also fun or engaging for adults to listen to are what's going to work for me, because they're not going to listen to podcasts on their own. When they're on their own, they're going to be doing other stuff. So I always like the stuff that works for everybody. And I agree with you that, you know, targeting as many audiences as possible is very smart. Listen, we're at the point in the narrative, I believe, where we get to broccoli content, and I'm excited to dive into it. And
yes.
Before we do that, we're going to take a quick break right here, and we'll be right back. Harry, can I have a minute of your time?
Of course.
I want you to know this. Getting access to capital is incredibly challenging and time-consuming for small business owners. True or false?
Yeah. Why do you want me to know this, Lex?
Most traditional banks, Harry, as background, they lack the technology and resources to truly understand a small business, and they'd rather lend to larger, more established businesses. But OnDeck is 100% committed to small business owners with fast, easy, and tailored financing. Are you digging this?
I mean, I don't know what it has to do with me, but I love that you're telling it to me.
Well, keep listening, because you will get this. You can get funding in as fast as 24 hours with term loans up to $500,000 and lines of credit up to $100,000, none of which requires business collateral. The application process is simple and won't impact your personal credit. And OnDeck delivers some of the best customer service with their U.S.-based loan specialists. Guess how much money, without looking, guess how much money OnDeck has lent to small businesses so far?
I don't know, $600 or $700?
No, Harry. They have lent over $10 billion to over 80,000 small business owners, and they carry a 9.8 out of 10 rating on Trustpilot and an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. OnDeck is the secure financing service that business owners everywhere can rely on. When I started in podcast advertising, I started by selling ads myself with a poorly named business called Podlexing. And I remember my first big investment was I bought an online subscription to a service so I could start contacting advertisers that I didn't have the contact information for myself. And at the time, it was a few thousand dollars, but it was still terrifying. It was money I was investing in the business. If I had known about a company like OnDeck at that time, it would have made total sense. When you're a small business entrepreneur and you're funding stuff yourself, you don't want to raise from VCs and you're trying to not harass friends and family, this is exactly the kind of service you need. And OnDeck, with a 9.8 out of 10 rating, I dig this the most. So if you're a small business owner and need access to capital, go to ondeck.com/wolfden right now, and you'll receive a free consultation with one of their U.S.-based loan specialists. You can apply online or by phone and get approved in minutes. Go to ondeck.com/wolfden. That's ondeck, ondeck.com/wolfden for your free consultation now. Harry, I assume you already have the website loaded.
I'm actually already spending all my new capital.
Great job. OnDeck.com/wolfden.
You spend capital, right?
Totally.
That's money.
We're back with Renee Richardson from Broccoli.
Yep.
And tell us, Renee, because the listeners who don't know are dying to know, what is Broccoli content?
Okay, Broccoli Content is a content, well, a podcast company, but I'm thinking it could go bigger as well, but you know, dreams. But it's a podcast company that's aiming to platform minority people in front and behind the mic. Basically, it means like I'm going to hire people that wouldn't necessarily get hired. That's why it was important for me to mention that I haven't worked at the BBC. but also people in front of the mic and tell stories that don't usually get told, whether that's your working class, whether you're an Indian person, because Indian people seem to not be allowed to speak on podcasts in England. All kinds of different stories, just, you know, I want to make the content for you, but also it's enjoyable. Like, it doesn't have to be serious. We don't have to always talk about race. I do talk about race a lot, but you don't have to talk about race. It could be, you know, minorities. We like to laugh. We like to be treated like a normal person. So that's what Broccoli Content is.
So I believe the description that I had in front of me said that it's a podcast production company founded in direct response to the lack of opportunities for minority talent, both in front and behind the mic.
Yep.
Talk to me about the behind the mic side. What does that mean?
Yeah, so the whole BBC thing is I couldn't get a, so even in TV and things like, well, I did have a job in TV, but like in, if you go inside the BBC, because I have worked there, and you, you know, the security, they're brown faces. The person serving you in the canteen is a brown face. The person cleaning the toilets is a brown face. When you go to commission content or speak to the people who are in charge of money and what actually gets seen, or the news, like you look at the newsroom, it's right behind the reception. It's like, it's mostly white. Anyone I pitch ideas to, they're all white. So it's like, that's a problem. Because one of the things is, I'm under 35. I'm a black woman. I like things. I have money. I like to watch TV. I like to listen to podcasts. I like to listen to music. But the people who are making the content for me aren't like me. So it kind of, so I kind of get left out. So like on our mainstream British TV or the British podcasts that are made, the majority, they're not for me. So I don't listen to them. So that's why I wanted to create, sorry, I've got a dog and he just always gets involved. So that's why I wanted to create, I knew at some stage he would. So I wanted to create a company that would make content for people like me, but I'm not just going to feel it with like my black friends. It's literally going to be everyone. One of my main things is to always work with strangers on at least, like every project, work with at least one stranger. Because that means that a stranger is coming into the industry who wouldn't have the opportunity before. They get a good credit, and then they can then get a job in a production company or somewhere they want to go. So the guy who worked with us on the show about race that I made, not show about race because that's a separate show, but I made a show about race. He, like, we just did a Twitter, like, you know, we were looking for a research assistant. He got the job. He worked with us. Then he now works in one of the established production companies in London and has like 3 Radio 4 documentaries commissioned. That would never have happened had he not worked with us. He would never have got the job because they don't really hire black people or people of color or boys and under 24 because he's all of those things.
I get it. And so, I will say this as a white man who's over 35, only by 3 years, so don't judge too harshly, but as a 38-year-old white man, what have you learned since starting Broccoli Content, and what do you have to teach me since starting Broccoli Content?
I would say, so I wanted to use an example of like, I say I was hired to do like, hey, Renee, you're the head of men, the content, like I make men content now. Really, the natural thing that people do is hire people they know and feel comfortable with. So I would hire a bunch of women and we are the head of men. Does that make sense to you? So BBC's thing right now is they want to target content under 35 for minorities who don't listen to the BBC. Yet they've hired loads of people over 35 who listen to the BBC.
No, that doesn't make
exactly.
sense.
Exactly.
Yes.
So that's what my point
is. That does not make sense.
It's like, it's a silly decision. Yes. So it would be like, hire people out of your comfort zone. If you feel nervous or not, I don't even think you'd feel nervous, but if you're like, oh, it feels like you're not comfortable making these like Google searches or calls or whatever to find people, that means you're on the right track. Because it means you're out of your comfort zone, which means you will be targeting or working with someone who's not in your world, which is what we need to have more variety in order for everyone to be represented.
And it's still, I think, overall, an insular or small enough industry that it's not just okay, but it's easy to ask for help, right? If you've got any kind of, the people who are following anybody who works in this industry are the right kind of people, yeah. right? They're the people who care about the industry. So if you post and say, hey, where can I find applicants? Where can I find people who could help me build this kind of content?
Yeah.
Sure, it could be, in theory, anybody could help you build it, but you're also going to get some recommendations for people who more clearly match the demographics you're looking to create content for, who, to your point, are going to be best suited to making it.
But I also think don't rely on people in this industry, because everyone in, so if I relied on my circle, like I know loads of different people, but they're all in London. It's like that's one bubble and they all work in media. So that's not really a wide representation of this country. So it's like use social media. Social media means you can reach people you would never have reached before and widen in your circle. So it's like, don't be afraid to ask in public, because a lot of people are afraid to ask in public because they're like, oh, I don't want people to know what I'm doing. Like, I've had that with companies.
Right.
And it's like, just ask the question. Just ask. Stop being silly. Just ask. So that's what I would say to you.
Listen, that's really good. I love it. And let me ask you this, because you have built, you're producing multiple shows there.
Yeah.
And the first one I want to ask you about is the one that has the most fun name to say, which is Community.
Yeah.
Tell us about Community.
Community. Community was, we saw like there was a lack of, so someone actually brought this to me, like the idea, and it was, we saw that there was like all queer shows, they're separate in their demographic. So like you'll have white gay guys, you'll have black gay girls, you'll have, you know, everyone's in their own segregated life. So we wanted to make a show that brings all the separate parts of the LGBTQIA plus community together, which is super, super hard, because one of the things, we had a male, a cis male white gay host, and we had a cis black female lesbian co-host. But what we found was that each, like every time like Chris Daniel would post like about one of the events, because we blended live shows with editorial, and it would just be, people would be suspicious of Lex's, so actually his name was Lex as well. Our white co-host was called Lex.
Yeah, I just got confused, but I'm with you now.
Yeah, so people would be, so the people of color would be suspicious of Lex because they'll be like, well, this is a white thing. And then the white people wouldn't go to the shows that Chris Daniel was hosting because she was black. So they'll be like, oh, that's a people of color thing. So it was like, it just opened my eyes to like, well, even though I knew the segregation was there, but it was like, it's so much deeper and it's so hard to connect and try to be even and tell everyone's story. Like, we wanted to make sure every single panel was representative. Like, it's not just about cis people. We had trans people, we had non-binary people on every panel. But it was still like, even if Lex was being a host, just it would just be filled with white gay guys because he's good looking. Like, Lex
it
has
goes
like
with
a
the
lot
name.
Of,
yeah.
But he has like loads of, like he's one of those Instagram people, influencer type model types, and so people fancy him, so they're like, oh, Lex is going to be there, and then the room would just be full of white gay guys, and then it would make the people of color and the trans people just not be comfortable in the room. And so that was when we did the Q&A's, that was one of the big things that came up. But we wanted to really just try and create a show and, you know, just carry on. It's not just, you can't just do it in one season, obviously, and you can't just do it with one show, but to create a place where each community interacted with each other, because that doesn't happen often.
Well, Renee, I'm glad we're talking for a variety of reasons, but I want to point out it's taken 161 episodes for a second Lex in the industry to come up on this show, so thank you.
That's okay.
there are other shows you're producing there too. What's the Receipts podcast for your good friends at the BBC?
So the Receipts is a podcast that started around over two years ago now. It's three girls, three women of color talking, you know, real life. They talk about love, they talk about relationships, they talk about careers. They're like three friends. They actually were strangers when they started, but they're three girls having real conversations. And I met them on episode 2, and I just wanted to make sure that they didn't get like taken in by one of these like platforms. They're like, oh, we'll make you money. And you know, where you kind of put ads before you should have ads. And I mean, now that I've said that, it's obvious where I was saying. But But I basically wanted to be like, don't do it. Like, concentrate on building your format and building your rapport with each other. If someone sends you stuff like trainers or makeup or whatever, don't put anything on the podcast for free, because that's one of the things. People just send you some trainers. Nike do it all the time. And yep. they expect, and then people just talk about it. And it's like, guys, they just gave you a free pair of trainers. That meant nothing to them. You could pay for this. You could get paid for this. So it's about kind of just making them, telling them to focus on building their show. So basically 2 years later, the BBC are like, hey, we want to make, like, put you on our platform and have an extra show. So that's where I officially was able to produce their show, The Receipts on One Extra. And that was just a fun extension of their show. And it just was a great, it was perfect for me, because I was like, I was one of the only people who met them or paid attention to them back in the day. Right. And I'm like, now look at us. Now, like, everyone wants to be a part of it. So it just shows that if you focus on what you're doing and what you have, and just don't worry about brands, like, everything can, if you have a great show and a format, it, everything will come, but just focus on what your actual thing is, which is a podcast, and being consistent with that. Like, the brands and all, everyone comes to you anyway. And now, like, they're just, sky's the limit for them, which is great. I love it.
I have several thoughts on this. Number one is, if you're an American English speaker, trainers are what you call on the East Coast sneakers.
Oh, sorry,
and on the West
sneakers,
Coast tennis shoes.
Sneakers.
And if you're an Australian yes. English speaker, I'm told that they are called joggers. So I'm just putting that out there as well.
But okay, then, sorry. Yeah.
No, no, you're good. I listen, I'm sure they all figured it out. I was just proud of myself for knowing. But the other point you were making about, you know, focus on making a great show first, and don't worry about necessarily having the ads right away, but don't give away ads for free. The other, and this is mostly just the one business side of my brain thinking about this, I always advise newcomers, or folks who are starting out podcasts, not to don't have empty spots either, right? So not that you're giving it away, but can you find an affiliate link? Can you do you have a different project to promote, or a friend's podcast to promote, or something where you can barter? But, like, get your audience and your show's format used to accommodating that kind of ad inventory from the beginning, because I think some of your listeners might be potential ad buyers anyway. And so if you're not BBC supported, so you're allowed to have ads, just having that there gets people to think, oh, I should reach out about potentially getting ads on that show. So I love the idea of just having ad spots even before they're sold, but nothing that you're devaluing the content for, but something that you can either make money for, or that you're bartering with friends for.
Yeah, that's exactly, because they started working with salons, because they're all into, like, music. They're going to do a makeover for me soon, which is good. But they're all into, like, beauty and, like, eyelashes, wigs and makeup. So they have deals with certain salons. But they also, what they did, which focusing on their audience, was having brunches and they focused on live events, because that is a way to bring your audience in on the joke and, like, be part of, because everyone thinks they're all friends. Which is cool. But so it's a way for you to interact with your fans and also, like, monetize it organically. So they've done really, really well. I'm really happy to work with them and just see what they've done, because it was an area that the mainstream media, like, podcasting industry completely ignored.
Yep.
And now everyone's chasing it. So it's awesome.
And talk to me about That's When You Get a Dog.
My show. So That's When You Get a Dog was my actual show that I used to practice producing, because I hadn't really properly produced a full blown podcast. And when I finished at Panoply, I knew I didn't want to work for a company again. So I was like, I need to be able to, like, be a producer. So yes. I made a show for women over 30, because I feel like, so magazines and things like that, like, do target women over 30, but I do feel like women over 30 should, in the mainstream, should be mothers, wives, or kind of just a bit like, you know, we don't exist anymore. So I'm like, what if you're not a wife? What if you're not a mother? What if you haven't got a partner? What if you're still, I'd just been basically let go. So I was an unemployed. So it's like, you know, that happens over 30. And so I wanted to make a show based on the themes that real women actually think about. So I made a 7-part series that had a main topic and then a debrief episode. So in total, it was 14 episodes.
I love it. How do you feel? What's your preference between hosting and producing? What do you find more enjoyable, more satisfying?
I would love to host if I didn't have to produce it myself. because I actually hate listening to my voice. You know when you read your narration and you have to listen back because obviously you make mistakes?
Yes.
And you just have to keep listening to the same thing. I just got sick of it. I hated listening to my voice.
You know, for a long time, I still consider myself a writer. And just this morning, actually, I remembered an article I'd written years ago, an essay kind of thing. And I read it and I was like, I don't mind reading that. But podcasting, I absolutely hate listening to myself on podcasting. That's why I have Harry. If I had to listen back to this, I would lose my mind. So I understand.
Yeah. So I think if I, because I'm going to start, I'm literally just about starting on the second season. I've done like 10 interviews already, so I've got to just do my narration and put it all together. But I'm just like, I just want someone to work with to edit it for me because I just don't want to listen to my voice. I hate it. I hate it.
Oh, I'm loving your voice, to be totally honest. But let me ask you this, and I hate to perseverate on the British English. You said you're working on a second season. Did you just dumb that down for American listeners, or do you call them podcast seasons? Because I would think you would say a podcast series.
I call them seasons. Yeah, because I watch a lot of American TV, as every Brit does. And you guys have said seasons. So years ago, I was like, why do they call it series and blah, blah, blah. But like that, and like, I don't know, Breaking Bad kind of around that area, I started just being like, okay, seasons.
Seasons.
So no, we say seasons now.
So looking at what you've accomplished so far, what you set out to do and what you are doing with Broccoli Content, what do you think companies like ours, like Stitcher/Midroll, what can we do to help with representation in the industry? I know you said that, you know, one key step is to make sure you're, you know, hiring a diverse set of people. Are there more things that we should be thinking about?
Yeah, well, I'm about to sign like a first look deal with, I won't say who because, you know, it's not signed yet.
I'm already jealous, but it's fine.
But I do have the contract. I have the long form. I just haven't signed it yet. Mm. But it's with a big studio, like a big company. And I think you guys should do things like that. I think it's important to nurture independent companies and independent people that you see value in, or that could be something in like 5 years. It's good to be associated with those people or nurture that or just be there for advice. And I know it's not like in a creepy way, like, oh yeah, I'll make loads of money from them in 5 years, but it just is like, it shows that I mean, that's obviously what businesses want to do as well, but
yeah, it just
shows that you're but it just shows that you're interested in growing the actual industry. Because if little people don't exist, and if independents don't exist, and if people like me and other people of color, we're not here, that's not an industry.
Right.
And film and everything like that, it's, you know, they've been had the lens on them for a long time and it's still very bad. But audio is so far behind those. Like when I came into audio, I was like, wow, it's like stepping back into the 90s. I wasn't even in the 90s because I was a kid, but it's how I imagined it would be because I was like, why is it so white? But it's because you guys didn't have like you couldn't see the audio because obviously there's no cameras. So it's like, don't fall into the traps of what publishing and film and television and everything did before. We know what happened. We know we need diversity. If you want a true, like, flourishing industry, it means including everyone. And just do that and just support smaller people, basically. Because hiring, yeah, obviously, and making content. But it's about also letting smaller companies grow. Competition's good. If you don't have competition, that's also not an industry. So you need to let other companies become like successful in order to build a fully like blown, you know, industry where everyone's winning and making money, because that's the main point.
That's right. And it can be profitable, right? It can be lucrative. So
we're not a charity over here. It's not a charity. Don't be afraid to make money, but we can all do that. And competition is good, but we need that.
Now, there are a couple.
You need people like me.
We do. You're right. And I'm jealous of whoever's got that deal. But there are a couple other shows I have on my list that you've helped make, I think, on a freelance basis, maybe. Do you want to talk about Lenny Says or Nevertheless?
Lenny Says was my first real, like, I'm a freelance producer job. That got that last, literally a year ago now. Josh Gwynn at Pineapple Street actually had recommended me. And that's funny because we had only connected via Twitter. So I'm like, that's why I'm like, social media is powerful. And so that was a Spotify original based in New York. And I worked remotely on that. And yeah, I had a little story in there as well. So I was actually in it.
Very cool.
Yeah. But it was such a fun project to work on. And just, it was you know, women, because Lenny Letter is like a women's based, well, was a women's based magazine. And the podcast was kind of an extension of that and bringing women's stories to life, essays and interviews. And yeah, it was a really fun kind of high end. It was like my first like experience of like, you know, a proper American podcast. You don't know because they're just normal to you. but to me, that was like, yeah, I've done like an American show. Awesome. So that was a really good experience because I just didn't think going freelance how busy I would be. And Nevertheless was another podcast that I produced that, again, had a writer based in New York and a writer based in London. And it was about women in tech. We did include some men because obviously men are there. But it was focusing on women because... Well, in STEM, because women are the minorities in STEM and they're just not enough. And women get left out of history and just key advances. Women are just left out. So we wanted to do a podcast that like has women at the center and focus and just look at the education, the future of tech and education, because everything's going all futuristic and way too fancy for me. But that was a nice experience as well, because I am not a STEM person. So I was literally like the normal. And so I could be like, I don't understand that. So that's what I kind of brought to the projection of it, because I would ask questions that a normal person would ask, because we want to understand algorithms and how they are, can be biased, and how AI will affect like schoolrooms and classrooms. So you need to have it in a way you know, both can understand, like the people who are in it and the people who aren't. So that was a fun show to work on.
So you've given us a ton of advice already. One question I like to do in every Wolf Den is ask the guest, you know, for advice for aspiring podcasters. I'm wondering if you can focus on this topic on what aspiring freelancers, folks like you who maybe don't necessarily want to have a full-time gig or have a full-time boss, what's the right way to find work? What's advice that you would give to folks who want to be freelancers in the industry?
So I've only done it once, and this is my second year. But I had a plan to have one show that really announced me to the industry. So Get a Dog was like my practice. And then my main like, haha, here I am. My debut was a show called About Race with Rennie Edo Lodge. And that show kind of made the industry stand up. It was on loads of like best of 2018 podcasts and podcast lists, and we only did 9 episodes and it had over 500,000 listens, which I know to Stitcher and Midroll is not a big deal but it is to like but I made that show in my living room, and it just showed that you can just do it if you set your mind on it. But I needed one show. I literally put my eggs in one basket, as they say. And I was like, this is going to announce me as a producer. And it did. And from that show, I got loads of like people, you know, contact me via my website and offering me work. I got offered loads of jobs as well, like actual full-time jobs. But I was just like, nah.
That's incredible.
I want to do it.
How cool is it?
So have a show. So the key is have a show. And podcasting, the barrier to entry is low, because like I said, I made it in my living room, but you've got to do the work.
Right.
Like you've got to actually be there editing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. Well, this has been excellent. And now we're going to open up our doors and welcome a listener question. It's the only segment of the show with a theme song. And it is time for the Wolf Den Mailbag.
Wolf Den Mailbag. Don't be happy, don't be sad. Now just sit back and enjoy this week's Wolf Den Mailbag.
Well, this week's question comes from Graham O'Brien. Graham asks, there's been some consolidation in podcasting. iHeart buys How Stuff Works, Sirius buying Pandora. What do you think of this trend? Do you expect that's going to continue? Who's going to emerge as the big players over the next few years? Do you have thoughts on this one, Rude?
Yeah, because I'm actually really excited, because everyone says podcasting and radio is nice. And I'm like, cool. Is the financial industry nice? No. Is, you know, the medical industry nice? No. So I'm actually looking forward to these big, I call them sharks, coming in and like taking, so like buying and consolidating companies, because it puts people on edge and it will breed more competition. So I actually think this is exactly what we needed. I was really excited when WME Endeavor came into the audio industry, because I was like, they are actual sharks. So I was like, this is exactly what we need. We need sharks to come in and kill a few people to in order to breed creativity and think, hey, we need to, because what, I don't, you know, you probably know the percentages more, but what percent of America listen to podcasts and what percentage of Britain listens to podcasts? But if you compare that to what percentage watch TV and what percentage read books or watch films, it's like we're nowhere near. So we need these big moves and these big companies to come in and like buy little people to in order to build a proper industry. I'm excited.
So interestingly, I'm not going to 100% agree. First, I'm definitely not going to agree that WME are actual sharks because I do a lot of business with them. But then,
no, they're nice sharks, but they're sharks.
I think that it can be good for the industry, right? Like the recognition of big companies that there is big money in the space, that this is an industry with a lot of audience and a lot of lucrativeness is a good thing. So I'm with you there. Where I get nervous for creators is consolidation also potentially means fewer bidders. Graham asked about or mentioned in his question, iHeart and Sirius announced DivX and Pandora. I think even potentially by the time this episode is out, there's going to be more announcements. And I think there's going to be more consolidation in this industry, really just in the next month or two, and that trend will continue. And that means fewer bidders for projects. So that's the part that gets me angsty, right? So let's say Midroll, Stitcher, buys every other company in existence. Now, when WME and all the other agents and every other creator comes and says, hey, we have this talent who wants a deal, what can you offer? If we've got the monopoly on it, we can say, okay, we offer them $10, and that's not good.
Yeah.
Obviously, we would never do that for a variety of reasons. But the part that's scary about consolidation, I think from a creator standpoint, is how do we make sure that that doesn't breed too many bidders? On the flip side, it could just be that if a lot of well-heeled companies start acquiring other companies, that they're just going to start overpaying. And that could be great for creators, at least in the short term.
Yeah.
Of course, if we overpay too much too, then you get the risk of, you know, if they overpay it, then they can't keep paying for it. Have they misaligned expectations? And is it hard to renew shows? Or do shows get disappointed when they want to do a second season and they can't be renewed? Overall, I'm an optimist, and I look at this optimistically. I think growth in the industry of any kind, whether it's consolidation or otherwise, is good, and it says good things about the industry. But I do get worried as you get fewer. Listen, from my seat, where my job is in large part acquiring shows, having fewer competitors to compete with is wonderful. But when I look at it from the creator standpoint, that's the part that I get nervous about, is how do we make sure that there isn't so much consolidation that it's harder for them to get great offers, if that makes
sense. So England are in that position now because we've only got one true player in the market. If you don't obviously get commissioned by an actual brand or like BBC publishing house or whatever to make a podcast, the only way you can monetize is via Acast. That's not an industry because they have no competition. So we're at the other end. So like, we have only one place, like you say, and it's one bidder. So they completely control the price point of the complete UK market. So we need people here to come and be like, we want to expand to the UK because they need competition. Because if it's just Acast, that's not an industry and that's not sustainable. So it's kind of like we went the other end of what your fears were, because that's how we started. But I do think that, because I'm probably from the film industry and TV, and it's just like ruthless out there that I'm just used to that way of working. That I'm like,
yeah, no, I get it.
But I'm just like, look, if you want to be a screenwriter, it's not easy. You've got to be good. And that's what it's going to do with podcasts.
Yes, that's fair. And listen, at the end of the day, you are right. If it means the industry is growing up, that's a good thing for listeners. And at the end of the day, it's a good thing for creators. Short term, it could be a little bit hard.
Yeah, it's going to be, yeah. We've got some teething problems for the next 5 to 6 years, probs. And then it should be good, hopefully.
Well, thank you for that. If you have a question for the Wolf Den mailbag, you can email us at wolfden@midroll.com, now a fully functional email address. Send us your question and we'll do our best to answer it. Renee, last key questions here. Where can our listeners follow you online?
I am on Twitter and it is Renee, R-E-N-A-Y, Rich. And not because I am rich, because that's my last name, the beginning of my last name. So it's Renee Rich. My Instagram is dead, so don't go there.
Just like, I am Lex Fry. I'm not actually a fry. I do have some vocal fry, but it's the first three letters of my last name. Well, thank you so much for your time, Renee. Thanks also to Harry Nelson and Jared O'Connell. The Wolf Den mailbag theme is by Casey Holford. You can subscribe to The Wolf Den at earwolf.com, Stitcher, or Apple Podcasts. And don't forget to go follow Renee at Renee Rich, R-E-N-A-Y, on Twitter. But don't check that Instagram. Renee, thank you again so much.
Thank you for having me.
Want to hear Earwolf pilots before anybody else? We made a podcast feed just for you. Earwolf Presents is full of great stuff, like preview episodes for upcoming shows, peeks behind the paywall, and pilots for podcasts that haven't even been made yet. It's like getting to listen in behind the scenes here at Earwolf. Starting January 21st, Earwolf Presents will have a bunch of new pilots for you, like Edgar Montplaisir's The Wokest. Catch conversations between the wokest man in the world and comedians like Risa Lechea. Also, hear upcoming pilots The Florida Cast, Wow, You're Native American Too?, This Week in Sports, and Carl Alarm all throughout the month. Let us know what you think of them with hashtag Earwolf Presents. Subscribe to Earwolf Presents to hear more great episodes from around the network and behind the paywall, like an episode of Drew Tarver's Strictly Business with Derek Contrera, or Act One of Matt Besser's punk musical, Stolen Idea. Just search for Earwolf Presents in your podcast app and subscribe so you don't miss an update.